Welcome back to Season 8 of Talking with Traders. This is the fourth year of this podcast since it began in 2020. Once again, IG Markets have come on board as the sponsor of this podcast. We're truly grateful and privileged to have such a global leader in CFD trading as our sponsors. In the coming weeks, I'll be interviewing various guests from around the globe on the topic of trading. Some of these will be past guests that we invite back onto the podcast, and some will be new guests. The idea is to attract a broad spectrum of different perspectives from players in different areas of the markets. None of what you hear here is financial advice, but it is intended to get you thinking about how you might be able to apply what you hear here to your own trading and investing. Remember to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast app. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes are released. Once again, thank you to IG Markets for sponsoring this podcast into its fourth year. And thank you, listeners, for your continued support of this podcast. Now let's get into this week's episode. Welcome back to another episode of Talking with Traders. And this is actually a special episode because this is episode number 100. We started this podcast in the pandemic during March of 2020 was when we did the first one. And yeah, it was only supposed to be a short, quick six episodes. And here we are, just keep going with episode number 100. And for our 100th episode, I'm delighted to welcome a new guest to the podcast. His name is Charlie Burton from charlieburtontrading.com in London. Welcome, Charlie.
Yeah, and well, thanks for having me on, and congratulations for your 100th. It's the way things go, isn't it? You don't mean to do it, and then it just morphs into something.
So. Well, that's exactly it. You know, we started, literally, it was a brief from IG Markets, who are our sponsors, to do a six-part podcast series, and that was it. That was going to be it. And after six, we realized it was quite popular. So we thought, oh, let's make it 10. And then after 10, we thought, let's just see if we do another couple more. And so we kept going. And here we are, 4 years later, recording episode number 100. And well, I guess that's a success story. But it's also due to quality guests like yourself that bring a lot of distilled wisdom, no pressure, and bring interesting content to the podcast so that listeners keep coming back. And hence, we've got a consistent offering, I guess. But with that in the bag, Charlie, it's good to have you on the podcast. You and I met recently at the London Trader Show in London, obviously, as the name would suggest. And you very kindly agreed to come on the podcast and talk to us a bit about trading, a bit about your background and what you do. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. As I always do with new guests to the podcast, can you just give us a bit of background into you, your career through the markets, where you started, how you got involved, and basically in a short, you know, less than 2 minutes, how you got to where you are today, trading your own account and running Charlie Burton Trading?
I worked in financial services straight out of university, and then it was in the late 90s. I'd asked one of my line manager at the time for some more personal development, and then he sent me on a course, and I ended up going there with one of my financial advisors. So I used to advise independent financial advisors on our funds and pension funds and all that sort of stuff. And my financial advisor said, I've got a spare ticket. Do you want to come to this financial trading course on options? So I thought, that sounds interesting. It's late 90s. We're all buying penny shares back then and stuff anyway, and you know, because everything was going up in the late 90s. Yeah. And so I thought, well, something I've always been interested in. I never would have known how to go about doing it like that. And that was what got my interest in trading basically US stocks and options. And I was just doing that on the side of my main career. And I want to stress that I never had an intention of doing what I do today. A bit like you just said at the beginning, you started off with doing six episodes of your podcast and no intention of necessarily doing any more. And then it just builds. And that was the same. Mine was just, I saw trading as something, this is something of interest that I could just do on the side for my career because I enjoyed my career. It just so happened that I was burning the candle a bit at both ends after several years and thought, actually, I've got this trading that I've been doing on the side. I'm going to see if I can make the transition and take a sabbatical from my career. This is around late 2001. and see if I can make a transition from being a career man to doing this thing for myself, because I was worn out from my career. And so that was the transition. So about late 2001, I started trading purely for myself. And then gradually, as the years went by, then ended up doing writing a financial newsletter with a partner at that time for some investment clubs, and then gradually these things just morph, and people say, "Oh, can you do this and can do that?" And then before you know it, you've got other things going on. So right now, yes, I've got Charlie Burton Trading, where I train traders and share my trades as I'm doing them, but because I'm FCA regulate authorized here in the UK. To manage money and manage accounts, so I do that under the umbrella of a couple of regulators as well. So I professionally manage money as well as managing my own, and I just got this nice balance now between doing my own trading on these managed account services under the full regulatory umbrella, and also doing some coaching as well in a online environment. So it's quite a nice, diverse day every day, really.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. Now, I mean, that's interesting that you actually didn't come from a sort of professional trading background where you were part of a, trading desk at a bank or a hedge fund or anything like that. You actually, I suppose, grew out of being a, what essentially was a retail trader, trading your own capital, took the plunge to do it professionally for your, for yourself for a living. And here you are. So, and that's quite inspirational because I know a lot of the listeners to this podcast, would be aspiring to that sort of thing where they, would love to quit their day job to take up trading full time. And I get a lot of people contacting me for that reason, saying, I'm tired of my job. I've got a bit of money saved up. I'd like to start trading full time. How do I go about it? And immediately that almost makes my hair stand up because most people are completely ill-equipped to take on trading full time, let alone if they've not even got sufficient part-time experience doing it and being successful part-time. And that's a little bit what we're going to talk about now. I mean, you spoke at the London Trader Show, a very good presentation, I might add, about the 80-20 approach to trading. And you said that traders, and I'm talking now, I guess, most amateur traders, retail traders, traders spend 80% of their time looking for a technical solution to their psychological problem. And I guess that's where it becomes tricky, right? Is that, it's not as simple as buying a technical analysis package and having a broker that's got online charts and a few, fundamental ratios and things, and then, hey, presto, suddenly you're a successful professional trader making a living out of it day to day. It's just not how it works. And I guess that's the route that, that's the area you play in as a coach, as a mentor, with clients who subscribe to your service. But I mean, let's just discuss that a little bit. This notion that traders spend 80% of their time trying to find a technical solution to a psychological problem.
This is the problem. Most people spend too much time looking for strategies and methods and certain technical approaches to the market to try and solve the problems that they've already got from their, from the trading they already have. Of course, we need to have a method, an approach, strategies, whatever you want to call it, an approach to the market, a technical approach. But the problem is you just see people jumping from approach to approach to approach over the years. The problem isn't a lot of the time the approach. The problem is themselves, and they're not seeing that behavior. So all that happens is someone approaches the markets, they go for a little bit of a drawdown, and then they think, oh, I don't want that strategy anymore. I'm going to go on to, I don't like that now. I'm going to go on to something else. Whereas really what they should be doing is probably immersing themselves probably more so in what they are doing and looking at the decision making that they're doing. Because most of the time I see this, and I'm sure you do too, over the 20 years roughly that I've been actually coaching people now, it's the same problems that people jump out of trades too early. They don't use stop losses. They over-leverage. They do all these things, revenge trade, all of the things that they do. So it's a psychological issue that they should be spending more of their time on. If they get the mindset right, really you can have a very average trading approach. But if you have a trader who's very good with an average trading approach, he or she will far outperform a very average trader with a very good trading approach, because the average trader will second guess what they're doing, sometimes take the trade, sometimes don't, and all of those things that they do. So the psychological thing side of things is so much more important than the technical side of things, in my view. Even if you look at, I know we might talk about it today, if you look at the Turtle Traders experiment, and you look at Richard Dennis, and he had all those original turtles, 50% of them failed. And yet they were following a very, very straightforward, systematic approach by someone who at that point in time in the 1980s was already worth, 100 million plus. And yet they still couldn't stick to the rules because of when they'd have losers, it wasn't a high win rate approach, trend following approach, but they couldn't deal with it. And yet they were being taught by someone worth all that money, proven success rate, and still shows you just how powerful the mind is when it comes to trading. So we need to spend more time on that side of things.
Yeah, so it's all about the mind and getting your head in the right space. I mean, I want to ask, why do you think the results of many retail traders are so poor? We know from looking at various CFD providers that are compelled by law to put up the percentage of their traders that lose money. It's always there in sort of bold at the top of their websites when you go and visit any of these IG Markets who sponsor this podcast, and then other City Index and CMC Markets and any of them, right? You go to their websites and the percentage of traders that lose money trading these geared products, be it CFDs, be it Forex, in my experience, always ranges anywhere between sort of 70 up to 85%. And it depends on the market environment, but it's always a very high percentage, call it around about three quarters of traders on average lose money consistently trading. And yet, I think it was you that gave an interesting stat in your presentation at the London Trader Show, when they looked back at the hit rate of their clients. Actually discovered that they're getting about 65% of their trades right, which is a very high hit rate. And if I could consistently get 65% of my trades right, I'd be delighted. My own hit rate is lower than that. It's sort of closer to 50%. Yet, despite that good hit rate, they're losing money on a consistent basis. What are they doing wrong?
Well, the all of those numbers that you've just mentioned, it's there within the numbers. So if you've got a brokerage, the broker that did the study at that time when they did the study, so the study was done actually about 4 years, 5 years ago. And at that point, it was a their stats showed that something like 75% of in entirety of their entire CFD customer base lost money, so to speak. And yet 65% of they in their entirety had a 65% success rate. So you're like, well, how can 75% of your book be your customers be losing if their win rate on average is 65%? It comes back down to the age-old problem. It's instant grat the need for instant gratification. So banking our profits too soon, and also coupled with the need and the desire to be right. We go through life going through education, being taught that being right as much as possible is a good thing. Well, it is when you've got to pass an exam. All the way through higher education and into the working world, being right is what we're all pre-programmed to try and achieve. And yet in the markets, being right more often can actually bring about a major problem, because anyone can be right a lot in the markets if you bank your profits really soon, because it doesn't take price a lot of effort to go just to here, and you just snatched it and you've banked your profit. So that's what goes on. People are banking their profits too soon, and they run their losses. So they don't cut their losses. So another major problem that we see is that the amount of traders out there, retail traders this is, who don't use stop losses. Because if you use a stop loss and you get cut out, then you've crystallized the loss. And for a lot of people, they don't want to crystallize. Oh, it will come back. This market will come back. I know that it's going to come back. They use this self language. Oh, it's definitely going to come back. And the time it come back. But they've taken all this heat and they've taken all this stress, during that time, probably added in to their losses as well. And then by the time they even get back to break even, it's such a relief they've just hit that button and they're out at scratch, And then, of course, at some point, they're going to go and take a larger loss. So even if they do use stop losses, those that do cash out earlier than they should be, so they're not getting good risk rewards. And a lot of people don't even want to use a stop loss because that desire, that need to be right, is so strong that they just can't bring themselves to accepting just saying, right, cut that position, move on to the next trade.
It's interesting. You used a term there, the need to be right. And I guess that's the question, right? Do you, in this business, do you want to be right or do you want to make money? Because it's not always the same thing. And the other point you mentioned, there's obviously the crux of this whole part of this conversation is the risk to reward ratio and how most retail traders don't get that right. Their winners are too small relative to their losses. And as you say, I mean, even if you're getting 65% of your trades correct as winners, if those winners are really tiny and your losses are significantly bigger, well then you've got it all the wrong way around. You're losing money. And that brings me to an interesting conversation or an interesting thing you raised in your presentation, which is about the coin toss experiment, which you, I think it was you said you did it, or you know someone who did it, it was
Yeah,
yourself.
we did it.
You did it, right? You did the coin toss experiment on the S&P 500. I mean, just tell us a bit about that because this is interesting. I really thought this was hell of a interesting in terms of a simplistic way to approach the market, very random, and yet it generates profits. I mean, just tell us about the experiment and what you did and the results.
Well, first and foremost, the reason I did the experiment was just to show people, people get so caught up in the charts, in their technical levels, and all of this stuff technically. And so, what I wanted to do at outset from this experiment is to sort of chuckle, although we're all using charts and analysis and using patterns and whatever, is to help with the psychological side of things, is to say, right, if we didn't have any of that available to us, and we did a random coin toss, could we still make money? And so we set about this experiment using essentially a coin toss. So what we did is we back tested price of the S&P over a 1 year period, and we literally set some basic parameters like the count now after the market open. And then it would use a given average true range based stop loss. And then a 4.5 times the stop loss would be the reward. So the risk reward, a 1 to 4.5 times risk reward.
Right.
But every single trade was based on a coin toss. So we just used a randomizer, just an online randomizer. And then we ran that over all of those trades over a 1 year period on the S&P, but we ran it 20 different times over, because one randomizer over all of that, you then start it again, and the random nature of when it says buy or sell each day is going to be different every single time. So for the purposes of the experiment, just to see randomly how 20 times over how it would come out, and on a £1,000 account, it yielded a £500 return on average. On average, some years were more, some years were less, but it gave a £500 average return. So a 50% return, and that's risking 1% per trade with a 1 to 4.5 risk reward. So it makes a mockery out of everything that we do in a way. But the point of it was to try and get people to let go. Let go about trying to second guess your trades and all of that. Just run for whatever your the risk reward is. And with a good risk to reward ratio, doesn't really matter. You could lick your finger and hold it in the air and just say, should I go long or short, sort of thing. And that was what we were trying to achieve. Would I ever trade that way? Still can't do it, no. But as an experiment to show people that actually, just with a bit of risk management and risk and reward, you can probably still make money if you can, again, like we've already said, if you've got the mindset to hold on and not start to anticipate and interfere with your trades, you can actually have one of the most simplistic, systematic approaches and still make money.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So just so I've got it right, you took, was it the same year, but you then,
Yes.
okay, so the same 1 year sample, and then you ran the coin toss throughout that same year 20 times, right? And then every time what the if it was heads you buy, tails you sell, for example, and then your risk to reward ratio was set so that your stop loss is, well, 1 R away from your entry point, and your target is 4.5 R away from, right. So, okay.
Correct.
And were these day trades exited every day, or were they swing trades that could have been held for multiple days?
Yeah, they were swing trades because they were based on the daily charts, and so it was we took the average true range, and then the I think it was 60% of the average true range was the stop loss.
Okay.
So the entry was half an hour after the open, and then 60% of the average true of the one of the gave us where we actually put the stop. So yeah, what again, this was an experiment in reality. And this is one of the things that we notice within the data is you could end up, let's say the S&P was in a in an upwards trend, you could end up with quite a lot of open positions until they all started hitting their 4.5 R.
Right.
So in reality, for a lot of traders, they'd end up, way too exposed. But that's why I say it was an experiment, really, because when it's trending, it could end up in quite a few positions day after day. It goes long, long, potentially. Some will be short,
Yeah.
obviously, because of the coin toss. But we did see in the data, of course, a coin toss, you can flip a coin and it comes up heads, 10 times in a row. So that sort of thing would happen with the randomizer there as well. So the reality of could you actually do it? Because there are margin restrictions on most accounts these days.
Yeah.
It might be you end up in too many trades, but that wasn't the point. The point was just to prove a point about risk and reward, really. Yeah.
Yeah, fascinating. And I mean, as we know, a coin toss is going to, on average, it's going to be 50-50. So you'll be right half the time and wrong half the time over a big enough sample of coin tosses. And and your experiment showed that it's a profitable system, and that's only down to risk to reward ratio, and obviously cutting those losses at the defined stop loss and risking no more than the 1% that you said, and maximizing the profits to, well, what would have essentially then been 4.5% per trade.
I think I really, for me, it was for me and the traders to show to the traders, it was an experiment in psychology.
Yeah.
In ultimately, yes, it was technical and you've got these rules, but it was showing people let go, just let it go. People hold on too tight, don't they, in
Yeah.
the market as to whether they're trying to micromanage their trades or whatever. Just let it go and don't worry too much about, oh, yes, but I'm in this long at the moment and I can see all these, it's so typical. People get into a long position, they can see all the reasons why the market might roll over.
Yeah.
Well, yes, they might, it might do, but you've got to let all that go and just stay with your trade. And like you've just said, if you take 100 trades like that, there's going to be plenty that will roll over, but don't worry about that. You'll just focus on the ones that don't and that go to your target. Because if you stay with those ones, they'll more than pay for the losses that are there as well.
Yeah. The one thing that we haven't spoken about, but I know you mentioned it in your in your presentation, was that of this experiment, I think you said the win rate was 25%, so a very low win rate actually, which is interesting because you would think a coin flip would be 50-50, as we said, but I suppose maybe some got stopped out before they worked, etc. So anyhow, a very low win rate of 25% average, and then the maximum drawdown was minus 30%. And I guess that's the part where an average Joe would really struggle to stick with the system when you see it down 30%
Correct.
and you've got to ride out that drawdown and really, have conviction to stay with the system.
Yeah, absolutely. But like I was saying, I'm not entirely sure that I couldn't stay with this because I think we all want some element of control, and feel and the feel that we've added something, we've contributed to this trade. It was our analysis, our we're following a pattern as opposed to just a random coin toss. I think for most people that would be really, really difficult. So it wasn't about trying to translate that into, in reality trading. It was just the experiment to say, yeah, look, even with a 25% win rate, and any system is going to have drawdowns, and so you have to expect that, depending on the type, the nature of the system that you're going to be to using. But it was really about just allowing people to let go a little bit psychologically, and for them to realize that, yes, they have an input, and we all want to have that input. But in the grand scheme of things, if we've got a reasonable risk reward ratio, and risk management, then we can still make money. But you're absolutely right. When you're in the depths of a drawdown, it's very difficult to stay true to a system. And so I think that's one a very difficult thing for people to deal with.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And that's often when people start system hopping
Yeah.
and what have you. But on this discussion around hit rates and things, and then obviously risk to reward ratio, which is still what we're on about. I mean, you mentioned some of the legendary traders in history, and we talk about guys like Paul Tudor Jones. And let's just have a look at some of their win rates on their trades, which is interesting. Most of them are quite low. So you've said Paul Tudor Jones' win rate was 35%. Jim Simons, who arguably is the best trader in history, win rate of 50%. Richard Dennis, who was the original Turtle Traders founder, as you mentioned, 30% hit rate. So these guys are, these are the best in the business. And their hit rates are as low as that, and yet they've made, millions and millions of dollars trading. And it's all down to the fact that they keep their losses small and allow the winners to run.
Yeah, in the main, yes. And so, in relative terms, their winners are a lot bigger than their losses, because they've transcended. And this is why trading coming back to its core is so difficult for us, because we have that scarcity that's built into us going back thousands of years in our development as human beings. There are times when we wouldn't have known where our next meal was going to come from. So when the next food source is made available, you're going to take it, and you see that to this day in your pet dog, when they wolf down their food, because they still have that DNA that they don't know when you're going to feed them again. They don't know, so they eat it as fast as they can. And we see that with even with people who have eating disorders. They say that still that wiring is still there, hardwired into us. About, well, we don't know. Subconsciously, we can rationally talk about this stuff and know that we've got food in the cupboard, but subconsciously, don't underestimate the power of that hardwiring that's there. And so it's the same when it comes to trading, that the power of that subconscious to want to take that trade, take those points whilst they're on the table, the pounds, the dollars, whatever, whilst it's on the table, is such a strong emotion that it's going to override our conscious. We can consciously rationalize, look, we've got to stay for our 1-2, 1-3, whatever our risk reward ratio should be for our given approach. But the burning desire is something you should never underestimate, the power of the dark side, that's for sure.
Oh yeah, that's right. Many traders, many coaches talk about, this thing of view every trade as one of the next 1,000 trades. And again, that's such an easy thing to rationalize. And yet, when you're in the moment and you're trading and you're in that trade, it's like your life depends on this one trade and the outcome of this one trade. And I guess again, that talks to this primal wiring in our brains about how you want to grab that profit, snatch it, and take it while it's on the table in the fear that it's going to disappear. Not really realizing that, yeah, it is just one of the next 1,000 trades. And of the next 1,000 trades, expect a big number of them to be losers. It's just part of the nature of this game, right?
I think and we can use that, and I use that a lot. This is just 1,000 trade, one trade in the next 1,000 trades, to try and desensitize the importance that we allocate to a given trade. But self-talk is also really helpful. So just saying, I can't afford to bank this profit early. To really try and use self-talk. Psychologists have proven that if you talk out loud, then you fire different neural pathways. So if you're just internalizing anything and you're just sat there at your desk clicking away, then you're firing a completely different neural pathways to once you talk out loud. Like if someone was sat next to you saying, "Why are you about to bank this profit early here?" Because if someone was sat next to you, you'd say, "Oh, I'm not actually. No, I'm not going to do that." But so psychologists have proven that if you talk out loud, you fire a different neural pathway and say, "Actually, I can't afford to take this." Because what we mean by that is, like you've just said, over the next 100 trades, if I on the winners, if I'm banking those winners too soon, ultimately I'm going to lose money or make way less than I should be. I'm going to massively underperform the true potential of the approach that I've got. So using self language for me is a massively important dialogue that every trader should have. Just like if you had someone sat or you think about even taking a trade.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So it comes down to sort of an accountability, I suppose. And like you say, if you had someone sitting next to you, or you're sitting in a dealing room, or in this day and age, when we're all working from home, some sort of a virtual dealing room, maybe a Discord channel or something similar, having that accountability actually is really helpful. And I guess this is what I also want to come to in terms of the work that you do. I mean, you're pretty transparent about the trades you're taking within your community at charlieburtontrading.com. I guess doing that, having that accountability with your clients, with your followers, and then, like you say, the act of physically talking about your trades, physically speaking about where your stop loss is going to be, or where your target's going to be, and what your intended plan is, it kind of keeps you accountable. Right? Because if you deviate from that plan tomorrow, you have to go and tell your audience, well, you know what? I actually ignored my stop loss today, or I actually cut my winner, but too soon because I was, snatching at a profit. Then you just look silly. So that's really important. And it leads me to this next question about the work that you do at your business, charlieburtontrading.com. And just tell us a bit about what it is you do for the clients you have, the subscribers to your service. What do you get if you're a client of your business?
Well, it is just a it is a subscription, so anyone can just join for as long as they want or not. But we've got members who have been with me now for 20 years, so which is fantastic to have senior traders themselves who have been who I've taught, literally just 19 years ago, who are still within our community today. But yeah, so on a day-to-day basis, I'm in an online trading room, our online private trading room, and I'm doing training sessions throughout the day, analysis sessions, training sessions, you name it, every single day of the week. So we have like hour-long sessions, a few times a day, and all of those sessions are recorded because a lot of our traders have full-time jobs or all around the world, and so we're in different time zones to when they may be asleep or whatever. So that's important. So every member gets all of my methods and approaches to the market anyway, all the theory videos, and that's all in a big bank of videos. But then every day, I'm analyzing the markets and monitoring the markets for my next trades. So they're seeing how I'm approaching the markets when I'm taking trades. They're watching me as I'm putting my positions on, as I'm managing my positions, all of that, because I'm doing it under the regulatory umbrella that I'm part of. So they're seeing me as I'm literally, as you just said, I'm having to walk the talk with them because they're seeing what I'm doing every single day, every week. But it's not day trading, it's swing trading and position trading that I do nowadays. Although I used to day trade, I don't anymore. But even though it's not day trading, a lot of the time we will be entering positions, during market hours, of course, during trading sessions and, news-based sessions. We've got FOMC this week, the week that we're recording this podcast. So all of those are important sessions where we might be taking positions, or I might be taking positions or managing positions. So it makes for just a really fulfilling time. And our members just drop in and out as much as they want to. They can be there all day, every day throughout all the sessions, or they can just cherry pick and watch the sessions that they want to. But I also have an app. So when I'm want to put any communications, then I put those communications onto the phone as well. So people that do have full-time jobs or whatever, to say, oh, I see Charlie's up to something here. What's he doing? So it's that full transparency, like you say. Everything I do is logged in real time, and that's important to me.
Yeah, certainly keeps you honest. There's no doubt. There's a lot of parallels in terms of what you and I do between our businesses. I think it sounds like you've got a bit more technological advancement, but I'm listening to you with a lot of interest here because I have a lot of clients, subscribers in South Africa who follow my work, and I do something similar to you. But it's, yeah, what channel do you use to communicate with your clients other than the app that you mentioned?
Well, we have our own the trading room software itself is a bespoke piece of software. So I
Okay,
can
so it's
share
not
that
the
with you off once we finish, but
yeah.
it's what's nice with the software. It's not like a Zoom or anything like that because it's fully interactive. So the members can chat in a chat box whilst I'm projecting, just like a Zoom, but it's so much more going on. I can see when people are typing, and we can do polls, and it's a lot more interactive than your sort of Microsoft Teams or Zoom in many regards, because it was designed for people like yourself and me to be fully interactive when we're doing our stuff with our traders.
Okay.
So yeah, I'll share that with you,
Offline.
but yeah,
Yeah.
it's really good.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. No, that sounds really good. And as you said, it creates that virtual trading room
Yes,
that we
exactly.
talk about. You know, it's nice to sit in a dealing room with other traders, but nowadays we all work virtually. So many of us do. So it's nice that you've got that technology to be able to do that. It sounds excellent.
I think what's important is for me, like it sounds like for you as well, it's about community. And like you've just said, back in the old days when you used to have dealing rooms, people were there physically together. With these sorts of environments like my one, everyone can see each other, logged in, and you get that real sense of camaraderie and community, which I think is so important when it comes to the markets, because people need that. They need, not everyone, I've got senior traders there like you have, but there's a lot of people who need that hand holding, and they need to feel like it's okay. Look, you've got all these other people who have been where you are right now. You're at a different stage in your journey, and so it's more than just me leading all these trading room sessions. It becomes a much greater sense of community as well.
Yeah, love it. Okay, that's really fantastic. And I really like what you said about, actually speaking out loud about the trades that you're doing and that the how it why your brain processes it differently as opposed to if you're just sitting quietly in your office by yourself trading away, there's no accountability. You can do whatever you like, but that often leads you to do the wrong things. So I think that's really been a nugget that I've taken away from this conversation, which is going to get me thinking a little bit more. I think that was fantastic. All right, Charlie, we're pretty much getting towards the end of our allotted time now. So I'm going to wrap it up. But just with that, if some of the listeners to this podcast would like to join your community or get in touch to find out more about what you do, how do they go about doing that?
Well, they can just go to charlieburtontrading.com. Most of our members, we have silver membership, gold, and platinum. Most of our members are the one in the middle. So often is the case. Gold membership gets you everything you need, and so give us a try. It's one. You can subscribe for a month and then go if you want to. It's as simple as that. But a lot of people, they give us a try and then they think, actually, I quite like this community stuff, and then they stay. It gives me a sense of purpose doing what I'm doing. Same as I'm sure for you as well. It's important to feel like you've got something it going on in your life rather than, for me, just trading wouldn't be enough. So I need that sense of purpose as well. So it fulfills something for my end as well. But yeah, for people, they can come and join at any time, and it's lovely being part of that community.
Yeah, certainly is. Well, I love it. It's very interesting to listen to how you've articulated that, Charlie. And brilliant. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I've really enjoyed this conversation. And as I say, episode number 100. It's been great chatting to you. Thanks for coming on to it for the 100th episode. And I look forward to communicating with you more in the future as well.
Oh, thanks ever so much for having me on. And by all means, I'd love to come back on again.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Talking with Traders, brought to you by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a leader in the field of online trading involved in this series. Please follow us on Facebook and engage with us there. And a reminder to make sure you subscribe to this series by clicking on the subscribe button on your favorite podcast app. If you've enjoyed this podcast, we'd also appreciate if you'd leave a review on the app too. Till next time.